turned on it.
High drive into left field. Gone into the White Sox bullpen.
Burned on it.
Swing and a miss. Strike three, and this one's over.
Sox win. Sox win.
In time, and the White Sox have won the ball game. There's a high fly ball to deep left field. Reynolds will turn and watch this one sail out of here. Encarnacion. Eloy hits it in the air to right field. Pretty well tacked. Polanco going back. Track. Ball leaping. Gone. Jose Jansen with the left field. Backing up now Reynolds. Still chasing. And that ball's going to fall at the top of the wall and gone.
This is White Sox Weekly. Yes! The Chicago Baseball Conversation on the flagship home of the Sox. 720 WGN.
And the pitch to Gonzalez. Line shot into right, coming in his angle, he's got the ball. And this one's over, and Lucas Giolito has thrown a no-hitter here at Guaranteed Rate Field.
Here's Mark Carmen.
What a week. Congratulations to Lucas Giolito. That was awesome on Tuesday night. And then Giolito's meeting the media 2 days later and talking about social unrest. And the White Sox continuing to roll at home, 8 in a row until they did drop one today. If you're just joining us, Royals 9, the White Sox 6. White 6, and I guess sick a little bit today. All right, we've got a big show for you. Jason Benetti coming up about an hour from now. We're going to have Danny Mendick just after 6 o'clock. And I think we're going to try to run into Andy Mazur as well after the 5:30 news. White Sox Weekly with you till 7. Weekends are better spent at the ballpark cheering on your Sox. Reserve your spot to see them live in 2021. Let's talk ticket plans, group outings, and more. Call or text SoxTix 312-674-1000 or visit WhiteSox.com today. I want to open up the phone lines here and ask you a question. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You have seen the White Sox now play 33 games of baseball. They are 20-13. They are sitting up top the division with Cleveland and Minnesota. Cleveland's going to be in first place at the end of the day. The White Sox are going to be in second, and Minnesota is going to be in third. The Twins are about to get swept by Detroit. There are rumors that the White Sox are thinking about making a trade. At least in discussions, John Heyman reporting that they're talking about Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn finished fifth in the Cy Young Award voting last year, but he's 33 years old. He's had quite the journey in his career, but he's red hot this year. He's having an incredible season, pitching for the Rangers. He's 4-0. He's got an ERA at 1.59, he's thrown 45 and a third innings. He's given up 25 hits. He would instantly be the best pitcher on your staff. And he's got a lot of postseason experience. But it might cost you, it will cost you a bunch. It might cost you as much as Michael Kopech. Or some level of Dane Dunning. And maybe they would want Nick Madrigal. I'm not exactly sure what they would want, the Rangers. But it's not going to be nothing. He's under control for next year. Do you want the White Sox to go all in, or somewhat all in, on making a trade in 2020 in the middle of a pandemic? You don't know what's going to happen. I'm kind of tipping my hand how I look at it. Seems a little crazy to me. But they are going to award a champion at the end of the year. Someone is going to win the World Series, I think, assuming we get through this and we don't have a massive outbreak in the bubbles that they're probably going to create for the playoffs. Someone's going to win it. Very weird, right? Like, you're invested in the team, I think some, maybe a ton, but you're not invested in the way you would normally be as far as going to the ballpark, and you're not going to be... Maybe you'd be thinking right now, but oh man, how am I going to get myself a White Sox playoff ticket? Right now they're in the playoffs. I really want to go to Guaranteed Rate Field. None of that is on the table unless things change here in 2020. But again, the trophy's going to be awarded. If you had the ear of general manager Rick Hahn, what would you say? Hey Rick, go ahead and do it. let's go. This offense is completely and utterly ridiculous. We hit 7 homers a game. We're on pace for 300-plus homers if it was a 162-game season. It would far and away smash any White Sox home run record. And by the way, I think that we'll be right there next year, too. And if it's a guy like Lance Lynn, we have him under contract. I see no loss. So what do you do? 312-981-7200. Let's go to the Team Hochberg phone line. Frank, welcome to WGN. Go ahead, Frank.
How are you, my friend? I enjoy your show, buddy.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, to answer what you just said, but I do have a comment after that, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
I wouldn't mind getting rid of Kopech because I think he's a head case. I read about the guys that have problems, emotional problems, from his early days as a teenager and stuff. So if Kopech's the guy to go to get a top-line pitcher, so be it. Okay? I don't know. You know, Lynn is a very good pitcher. Madrigal, I don't know. I think he's going to be good, but you are bending. Sox have a lot of cards to deal for a deal. So, I mean, I wouldn't sell the whole team, but if Kopech wins, I wouldn't be disappointed. I really wouldn't, because I think the guy's going to be a head case his whole career.
Yeah, Frank, I get a little squeamish when you put it like that. Look, the guys, everyone's allowed to have their journey to, you know, being the best that they can be, and just because Michael Kopech didn't feel like playing this year, I think it'd be incredibly foolish to write off him as a player and what he's going to do. Now,
read up on his history.
I'm
about 15 years old.
Right, I'm aware of Michael Kopech's history. Included in that history, by the way, is the White Sox giving up Chris Sale to get Michael Kopech. They obviously believed a ton in him there, and believe me, if Michael Kopech was out there, there's a ton of teams that would want him. But what's your other point, Frank?
Here's my comment, and you know, I've been a Sox fan since 1956. I eat, drink, and sleep the White Sox. They are Ricky Renteria. Some guys are meant to be bench coaches, and some guys are meant to be managers. I do not believe he's the guy that takes them to the promised land. He doesn't know how to handle the pitchers. Number one, last Sunday, sticks out of my mind. Cease goes up for a sixth inning wild. He got in tons of trouble in the fourth and the fifth. You got 5 innings out of him. You got a bullpen that's rusted. You got a day off the next day.
Frank, I got to cut you off because I got to go to news here. I'll respond to everything you just said there, but we do have to get a check of news here at 5:30. And I'll talk about Ricky. I'm pro Ricky. Quick timeout, White Sox Weekly till 7:20 WGN.
Really hard to do, but it's not. It doesn't shock me at all that Lucas did that, you know. And he's come a long way from 2018. But I mean, I think that's what happens when, you know, a really, really talented guy just doesn't give up and works really hard, and stuff like this can happen. And it's an incredible story, and one I'll be telling, you know, my friends and family and kids and grandkids.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Where were you when Lucas Giolito threw the 19th no-hitter in White Sox history on Tuesday night? I was at 720 WGN doing your post-game show. That was a ton of fun. Memories from Tuesday night. I wouldn't mind taking some of those calls today. 312-981-7200. Danny Mendick coming up at the top of the hour. Andy Mazur coming up in a bit. And we also will hear from Jason Benetti at 6:30 today. But right now, Don in Frankfurt is here to ask the question, should the White Sox go all in, trade some of their young talent to bring in a veteran pitcher a la Lance Lynn in 2020? Don, go ahead. You're on 720 WGN. What are your thoughts?
Hey, guys. First, I want to thank you for taking my call. But, you know, as a diehard Sox fan, I am definitely all in on making a big move right now, because with the way the season's gone and how crazy things have been, anything can happen in a shortened season. And I got to say, this team has really been fun to watch right from the get-go with the pitching, the hitting, the home runs. I would like to see him add either another big-name pitcher or maybe even another bat to the lineup. But this team has really been fun to watch, and I would take them probably against anybody right now.
Another bat, Don? Where do you want to play this bat?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm not even sure how you could squeeze in another bat in here unless maybe
I mean, we can get creative, Don. We could put it in right field if you really want to go all in, even though you traded for Nomar Mazara. I suppose that would be one spot you could do it. You could also, if you really want to be crazy, you could say, you know, Nick Madrigal, we like you in the future, but we're going to put this big bopper at second base. I don't think they're going to do that, Don. And, Don, I think that they will. If anything, it'll be a pitcher. But I'm skeptical. We'll see. There's a lot of rumors out there right now. And
I would really like to see him pull the plug. I would really like to see him make a move. Because, like you said, a shortened season, it'd be good to make a move and just see what happens in the postseason.
So if they win the World Series, Don, it'll feel like it was just 2005 all over again. It won't feel any different to you?
Actually, it's starting to feel like that, almost like now. I mean, that was even fun back in 2005.
Okay.
I've never forgot that one, but yeah, this team is really fun to watch.
They are. Hey, Don, I appreciate the phone call, all right? Thanks for checking in.
All right, thank you.
Yep, 312-981-7200. Let's see if Andy Mazur is all in on making a move before the deadline. Hi, Andy Mazur.
Hi, Mark Harmon. How are you today?
Do you have Rick Hahn's ear? What do you think? Are all these rumors out there? Are the White Sox making a deal on the 31st or beforehand?
Yeah, I have no inside knowledge on anything at this point. And again, it's all rumor until something actually happens. But you know, I could see the point where people would think that another pitcher might not be a bad idea, especially with the start that Dylan had today, and that Lopez has been kind of a little bit of a question mark, but. Yeah, I'm not really sure what they want to do because, again, you don't want to mortgage too much of your future for a short-term gain here at this point. But, you know, if you have an opportunity to go to the playoffs, you certainly want to capitalize on it no matter what the situation is here in this crazy short season. But so I can see it kind of both ways. If you can get somebody that's controllable past this year and is not going to cost you much, sure, why not pull the trigger on it if you have the opportunity to?
Yeah, and the cost you much thing is the whole crux of the issue. Like, to get Lance Lynn, Dane Dunning, I would think, is at bare minimum, but it could be Michael Kopech, and I just don't, I can't imagine they'd be that aggressive, but again, I'm not Rick Hahn, and they have a lot more information than I do, so I suppose anything is possible, but it would surprise me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you get to the point now where, you know, like Rick Hahn has been talking about the last couple of years, I mean, you get to the point where you're happy to be a buyer rather than a seller at this point. You could also be a stand patter. If you think you have exactly what you need to go forward. I mean, if you think you have three great starting pitchers, then you don't need a fourth or a fifth at this point because you're going to be in a short series when you get to the playoffs. You know, then you stand pat. I mean, if you think that you've got enough at that point, I mean, that's what you do. I mean, they're much smarter than me up there in that office, so they know exactly what they're up to at this point. They have a pretty good feel and a good read on their ball club after 30-some games.
Speaking of your intelligence level, which I don't like you downing yourself there, Andy, I think you should put it right at the top here. You graduated from Bradley. You're a man of many talents. When did you get a sense that Lucas could have a night to remember on Tuesday? Because, I mean, I remember, you know, the first couple innings, like, whoa, this dude's got his really good stuff. But you don't start to think no-hitter at all. And then, to be honest, like, I wasn't even paying attention as far as, like, the hits were concerned. And then Curtis, like, hey, you know, he's got a no-no going. I'm like, oh, okay, yes, he does. You know, it wasn't something I was thinking about until I started thinking about it in the sixth inning. What about yourself?
You know, right after the fourth inning, after he gave up the walk, the leadoff guy to Gonzalez, the inning came to an end, and I looked at DJ and I go, you know, he's got that stuff tonight. And that was really the only thing I said about it at that particular point in time. And it just got stronger as the night went on, I thought. And the way that he was working with James McCann was something, I think, a beauty to kind of behold at that point. You know, Lucas, over the last year plus now, has been a guy that's basically reinvented himself. This could not have happened to a better guy and a harder worker and a guy that was so self-aware of what was going on with him in 2018 that he said, enough's enough. I'm going to change this. I'm going to reinvent things, and I'm going to come back a lot better. And, yeah, he was a lot better. He was an all-star last year. If there was an all-star game this year, I think he might have a line on even starting the game. That's how well he's been pitching. Even he's had two bad ones, and one of them was against the Twins, who not a lot of teams have a whole lot of success against, unless you're the Detroit Tigers, apparently. and you know, one bad one against the Cardinals, but that was it. I mean, you look at what's going on with him, and it's a wonder he hasn't thrown an order before this, to be honest with you, with the stuff he has and the command that he had the other night. And I know people are going to say, oh, it was against Pittsburgh, blah, but Pittsburgh had won three straight games and were bashing the ball against the Brewers. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was a minor league team that he was facing. It was a team of hitters that had baseball bats in their hands, and he had to get them out, and he did.
It's funny that you say that, because I had never actually thought no hitter would look like one day he'll throw a no hitter. That had never crossed my mind. But I was thinking, can this guy become a perennial all star after making it last year? And to me, like, the answer is yes. And like right now, White Sox get in the playoffs, it's clear that he's going to be their game one starter if they can have the time to set it up and all that. And he definitely wants that. He's also such a thinker, Andy. Like, I'm not sure your setup in there. I know you guys have TVs, I'm sure. Did you notice him just pacing in the dugout once the eighth and ninth inning, and he's just sweating? And I'm like, all right, this guy knows exactly what's going on, and it's all moving through him. And I thought it was impressive to see that, and that he was able to handle it.
Yeah, he handled it really well. I mean, he kind of did his own thing. And yeah, it was interesting to watch him pacing back and forth. He was actually thinking about the next inning. He was thinking about, you know, the guys he was going to face and how he wanted to work them, and he was walking and talking to himself, and people were kind of leaving him alone, which was nice to see. But when it all happened and the angle put the squeeze on that ball down the right field side, and it all ended, it was incredible. It was a great night to be around it. I feel so bad for the fans, because obviously not being able to be there with a moment like that, it broke my heart for the fans not to be able to be there. And I did get a chuckle out of a couple people that I saw tweeting who had cardboard cutouts there that said, "Damn, the cardboard cutout got to see it and I didn't." this is the way it goes here in this really weird 2020 season.
Your first ever no hitter, Andy Mazur. You've been doing this for more than a minute. What was it like for you?
It was really cool. You know, I'm one of these guys that, and I know people will poo-poo it, but I do have some respect for the superstitions of the game, and I know that a lot of people will say, you know, you have nothing to do with the outcome, and I realize I don't have anything to do with the outcome of any game whatsoever. Whatever I say, it's a coincidence. If it happens, it's a coincidence. If it doesn't happen, but, you know, working with DJ, who played the game, I respected it, and I kind of worked my way around it with letting people know what was going on without really letting them know what was going on. And I thought it was a pretty interesting way to do it. And I had DJ's full support on that whole thing as well, and we were both trying to make it very well known what was going on without mentioning the words. And when I was actually able to mention the words, it was a big relief, and it was kind of cool. I got to be honest with you, I felt a little pressure. Yeah, going into the ninth inning. If it happened, you know, is the call going to be okay? And again, I don't want it to be about me. I want it to be about him, but I want it to be an accurate and a good call. So I kind of felt, you know, keep it simple. And I did borrow a little bit from the great Vin Scully with the putting the date in there, because he did that a lot on all the no-hitters that he called over his career. And I think it's a nice historical marker. When you go back and listen to it, you can recall that day. And the whole night, though, was so surreal and so cool. I was so happy to be a part of it, and I was really happy, more so for Lucas than anybody.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to mess it up, and I love that historical thing. I didn't realize that Scully did that. Really cool, because, yeah, you know, you go back, oh, that was August, whatever it was, of 2020, and we were in the middle of
August
a pandemic.
August 25th.
There it is. I mean, we were in the middle of a pandemic. It was a Tuesday night. No one was in the ballpark. And Lucas Giolito threw a no-hitter. Ben Anderson's telling me I'm up against the break here, so I don't want to break protocol here. But thanks for being on, Andy. Appreciate it. And awesome job on Tuesday. Awesome job all season. And talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, Ron. Take care.
Andy Mazur, 720 WGN White Sox Weekly. We're going to hear from Tim Anderson coming on back here. And then after 6 o'clock, Danny Mendek. And then Jason Benetti, 720 WGN.
And the pitch to Gonzalez. Line shot into right, coming in his angle, he's got the ball.
Oh yeah, I owe Engie something. You know, we got ahead with sliders, and I knew McCann was going to call the high fastball. I was about ready to throw it to the backstop. Unfortunately, I pulled it down a little bit. I looked at the pitch again. It wasn't a terrible pitch, but I think that he was ready for the heater, and he put a really good swing on it. But you know, that's part of a no-hitter. There's always that, like, one play, right?
This is White Sox Weekly.
Congratulations again to you, Lucas Giolito. Special week for Lucas. And looking forward to seeing how he does against the Minnesota Twins. That'll be interesting, to say the least. Let's. Tim Anderson spoke after the ball game today. Tim was 4-for-5 today. You know, he won a batting title last year, I'm sure, as you recall. And nobody saw that coming. I don't care what you say. Oh, yeah, Tim Anderson's going to win a batting title one day. No, I didn't see that, and I don't think you did either. But you know, he finished last year hitting .335. Right now, 23 games, pandemic. He's been hurt, so he hasn't played the whole season even. But he's hitting .361, on base percentage of .398. Last year, his on base finished up at .357. So he's 41 points up on the on base. I'm really impressed with my math today. This is amazing. He's 26 points up on the batting average. Smaller sample size, but pretty impressive. Yesterday, Jackie Robinson Day. Tim, he was the lone African-American player on the White Sox, but now trading for Jerod Dyson. He's one of two. By the way, I'm really into Jerod Dyson. I was working in Kansas City when he was coming up to start his career. Phenomenal guy in the clubhouse. Very good outfielder. Great speed. Steals bases. And that is a low-level all-in move that made a whole lot of sense. White Sox just gave up some salary in the international signing pool. Basically gave up nothing. And Jerod's not having a great year for the Pirates anyway. But I think a very smart, intelligent play by Rick Hahn. Think about the White Sox leading defense with Dyson, Robert, and Adam Engel. That is, I mean, what's going to fall? Not much. But this was Tim after the ball game today. A little bit of Tim Anderson.
Tim, 52 home runs in a month for the White Sox. That's a month record with Encarnacion's home run today. What has it felt like during this past month with the way the offense has been clicking?
Man, we've been locked in. You know, the energy been carrying from top to bottom. And, you know, being able to do something like that is definitely, you know, we definitely going to cheers for that. But we got to keep going, man. We got to keep going and keep, you know, try to keep that same momentum heading to next month. And, you know, keep rallying around each other and continue to get better.
Vinny Duber.
Tim, you've been part of this team for so long and throughout this whole rebuilding process. Now that you guys are, you know, into the final month of the season here and you're right at the top of the division, if not in first place after what happened today, but first place yesterday, how does that feel to kind of see this kind of thing come to fruition here?
It's definitely great, you know, to see the growth. You know, it's been a long time coming, you know, since I got called up and where we are today. You know, definitely take pride in, you know, being in the top of the division is, you know, definitely, you know, kudos to us. But we got to keep going, man. We ain't done. We got some more work to do, and we just got to bow down and, you know, keep going.
James Fegan.
Tim, with you know, other teams protesting and sitting out across the league, talking to Yasmani yesterday, he talked about how it being Jackie Robinson Day kind of drove the decision to go ahead and play yesterday. What was your kind of perspective on the decision to do that, and how did you feel about it?
Oh, the same. You know, yesterday was a huge day, you know, especially for the culture. You know, Jackie Robinson, you know, did so much on and off the field. So, you know, definitely wanted to play yesterday. You know, at least bring, you know, it's a lot of negative things that's been going on. So, man, you know, being able to play, you know, brings positive and makes me happy. And, you know, a place that I can be happy and bring a lot of excitement. And, you know, hopefully, you know, put on the show for people to put a smile on their face as well. So, you know, obviously it was Jack and Robinson Day, so definitely wanted to play.
Penny Duber.
Tim Lucas had talked to us on Thursday about the protests and his support and how they matched up with what he believes in and stuff like that. What were your reactions to the protests? And do you kind of maybe not wish, but how odd was it that you didn't really have that opportunity to participate just because of the way the schedule was?
Yeah, I definitely support, you know, everything that goes on with the protests. You know, 110%. You know, it's just been in a, you know, been in a bubble that, you know, where you really can't say much. I really didn't have much to say. So that's kind of why I didn't kind of speak to you guys today, because I was just lost for words, you know, being hurt and, you know, going through such a tough time. But, you know, you try to bring some positive into it. And like I said, man, playing on Jackie Robinson Day, you know, definitely brought a lot of excitement to me, made me happy again. And, you know, just being on the field is definitely a positive and, you know, something that, you know, I kind of get away from, you know, so much negative and kind of, you know, get in the bubble to enjoy life and just enjoying the moment. So, you know, I definitely wanted to play.
It's Tim Anderson after the game today. Really thoughtful. I didn't have a whole lot to say. You got to respect that. I'm sure he's had, plenty of thoughts going on. How do I best contribute right now? And athletes in general, at least in my mind, there's so much being put on them. Well, if you sit out, then what's that going to do? What's next? Nothing's going to really change. And maybe it won't. Maybe it will. A lot of discussion going on right now. So I think it's great that people are, especially if we're talking about sports, that athletes are stepping into the conversation, perhaps educating themselves more and more. And I know there's a lot of people that are like, they're going to do that, I'm not going to watch. And I don't want to get on the big pulpit here, but try to, you know, just having an open mind, open heart to everything that's going on right now is probably the best path for all of us. So props to Tim Anderson and the White Sox for how they're handling it. News is next, then Danny Mendick. It's 720 WGN. Pleased to be joined by Danny Medwick. Whoa. That's messed up, Danny Mendick. How does Jeff Passan do that to you? Welcome to White Sox Weekly. Thank you for being on. I enjoyed that on Twitter, though. It was good entertainment. Have you mended fences with Jeff Passan?
Yes, we have. He actually reached out to me, and he was a very good guy about it. He apologized, and I actually got a tweet from the guy who did the graphics, and he said he apologizes as well, so... you know, it's one of those things where when I saw that, I was like, you know, they hold us accountable for everything that we do. I'm going to hold them accountable. So I tweeted at him and I was like, I'm going to let them know. But I'll tell you what, I think Medwick might be my player's weekend name.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I don't think you can butcher it more than that. Like, that's pretty bad.
I guess it was like somewhat in the ballpark, but yes, I would agree, really, really bad. At least they apologized, and you're in there, Danny Mendick. I mean, think about where you were a year ago today, right? I mean, I think you should be proud of yourself for the journey that you're on.
Absolutely. I mean, all I've ever wanted was an opportunity. You know what I mean? Just an opportunity to be able to prove kind of what baseball player I am and whatnot. So to be able to get it this year, it's been absolutely awesome.
And I know you've talked about this, but I haven't gotten to have the discussion with you, so I got to talk about Dancing for Dubs. And
yes,
you're going to be missing Zach Collins now. He's down, you know, he's optioned out to Schaumburg. What does this mean for Dancing for Dubs?
So I'm actually trying to figure that out, but I'm thinking I'm going to continue it. I got a lot of people that I really enjoy it. So I think I'm going to, it's been on pause for a couple days, but you know, the nice part is we get to go and play today, so we get that dub today. I'm gonna try to find me a little guest star, and we're gonna get out there and dance for the win. So,
do you have anyone in mind? Are you thinking about finding a partner, or are we just gonna try to, depending on the day, ask a different individual? What's the thought process?
Yeah, I would assume that's how it's gonna work. We're probably gonna go with, you know, player of the game or someone that's willing to show off their dance moves a little bit. Yeah, it's just going to be, we're going to fly with our, you know, fly with our seats. Just kind of goes it flows and see what happens. That's kind of how it normally works. We pick the song about 5 seconds before we're about to do it and just, you know, dance how we feel, and that's how it goes.
Who
can't try to plan that stuff.
Yeah, and I guess it's just we're going to do it, and this is whatever's going to happen. Who would you say is the least likely to want to join you on the club?
Oh, that's tough. I think everyone would do it. I think it's just more of like, who, I don't know. I mean, I guess I should ask around and see, like, if I get a vibe from somebody that, is really not about it. But I haven't gotten a vibe like that from anybody. Everyone's more just like, you know, typically we ask the player of the game, and if they're kind of, you know, looks like they're taking their time or they're about to hit the shower, it just doesn't work.
Does anybody ever look at you with puppy dog eyes, please choose me?
No, not yet. I'm trying to get that. You know, once we get this following going and more people jump on board, I'm hoping that's the case, that guys are going to be like, yo, I'll do Dancing for Dubs today.
See, that's how, easier. That's how it should be. They should be knocking on your locker door. Hey. When am I going to be on Dancing for Dubs? I want to up my profile. This is ridiculous that you haven't asked me.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and then going back, I guess it was the win in Cleveland, right? And it started the 6-game win streak. So you had to we won, so we got to do it again. Had you thought about it all the way back to spring training, or was it just really in the middle of the season, slow start? Okay, we won a game, we're going to do it, and let's keep rolling.
No, yeah, I mean, it worked out. We were in Cleveland, and me, Zach, and Dylan Cease had our lockers in the kitchen. COVID reasons and whatnot, they put us, it was just us three in this kitchen area, and we're jamming out after the win in Cleveland, and me and Zach started dancing, and Cease recorded it. And then we started the hashtag Dancing for Dubs and just caught fire, and we just kept it going. And then, you know, I mean, we're tied in first place now or whatever it is. Clearly, we've won a pretty good amount of games, so we've had a good amount of dances.
When did you get a sense that this club is about to go on a run? I mean, do you even feel that at all when you're in the middle of it? I don't, you know, because every day is a grind. You're coming to the ballpark, you're trying to win a game. But maybe there was some feeling in you like, yeah, I think we're about to take off here. Like, does any moment stand out? Some people were saying the back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs. What about for you?
You know, I think it was just from day one, you could kind of tell that we had all the potential. Don't get me wrong, on paper, you know, a lot of teams are good on paper, but then sometimes they don't pan out. On paper, we're very good, and I think the best part about it is we have really good team camaraderie. So everybody gets along in the clubhouse. We're always jamming out. We're always having fun. And then that translates into the game. You know, you go out there, and I was actually talking to Dyson about it, and he was like, you played with the played for the Pirates, and we were playing against them, and he goes, these guys are just so loose. They're jamming out during BP, and then, like, game starts, and they just go pow, 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 pow. You know what I mean? Like, and that's how it's supposed to be. You get up there, and we're going to put pressure on the other team. I think everybody knows that we're good. So down 5-0, if we're ever, you know, in a situation like that, it's always – something's always doable. We could always make a comeback. So it's an exciting team, I'll tell you what.
There's no doubt, and before the year in the radio prognosticator booth over here, I'm like, the White Sox are going to be really good if they get, like, any level of pitching. You're playing behind these guys, and Lucas had a rough start to start his year, and so did Dylan Cease, but these guys have been just incredible. I mean, let's talk no-hitter, let's talk what Cease has done this month. It's got to be putting a huge smile on your face to see the progression on the mound.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the cool part about that is, you know, when a guy isn't at his best, to kind of see what they do. And I think the best part about Giolito and Cease is you sit down and talk to them, and they just love the game of baseball. So, you know, they're always talking about, okay, how can I get better? How can I make my pitches better? How can I get this batter out? And that's the thing, you know, with Lucas' no-hitter, that's hard work in the making. You know what I mean? When a guy goes out there and throws a no-hitter, that's about as close to as perfect as it gets. Besides the one walk, but that guy, it's what you dream of. So for him, that's awesome. I'm happy for him. Congratulations. But that guy works his tail off. You know what I mean? He deserves every minute of that.
Danny, hang on 1 second. We'll come right on back with Danny Mendick on White Sox Weekly. Sox fans, look forward to celebrating special occasions while catching all the action live in 2021. Start planning your group outings and reserve your spot today. Call or text SoxTix to 312-674-1000 or visit WhiteSox.com today. Coming back with Danny Mendick, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN, Danny Mendick with us. Sox fans, the Chicago Sports Depot is now open every Tuesday to Saturday from 12 to 4 p.m. at limited capacity. You can get the newest Sox gear to rep all season long. For more information, visit WhiteSox.com/depot or follow at White Sox Store on Instagram. And Sox fans, reserve your spot to catch all the action live in 2021. Let's talk ticket plans with flexible payment options, postseason priority, and more. Call or text Sox Ticks 312-674-1000 or visit WhiteSox.com today. Nick, I want to go back to last Sunday against the Cubs. Bases loaded, Ian Happ at the plate, bounding ball up the middle, and a sweet double play by Tim Anderson where you had to get out of the way. You remember that play?
Yeah, so the thing about playing with Timmy up the middle is Timmy's super fast. So he has more range than most people. In a situation like that, you'd always feel like the shortstop would flip it to the second baseman, but he's so quick and he knows his arm strength that he knew that it would probably save some time if he just came and threw it, or at least, you know, that was his decision at the time. So, you know, I was busting his chops after he made that play. I was like, bro, I want to be a part of the greatness too. Like, you know, help flip the ball. I want to do something cool too. But no, he knew he could get him out, and it was, you know, he could put a little something on that throw.
I'm trying to remember. I think they said it on the broadcast that he started throwing before he stepped on the bag. Does that sound right?
Oh yeah, I'm sure. He's got a rocket for an arm too, so that would not surprise me.
That arm, man, it's big time impressive. For you now, with Nick back up here, you're probably going to jump around positions here. Like, what's the hardest position for you, Danny, to step into if you don't know that? Like, let's just say that somebody got hurt in the middle of the game and had to come out. Like, is there any spot where you feel like most challenged by?
Honestly, I would have to say second base, because second base is against the grain. You know, shortstop and third base, every time you field something, you're moving towards first base and kind of in that direction. Second base, you know, you got to flip to second. Sometimes when you go to your backhand, you got a funky throw. And second base, you don't have a long throw. So sometimes you get caught up in the fact that you're going to stop your feet, and that's when you start getting bad hops and stuff like that. At shortstop, you always try to keep your feet moving. So second base, you know, I always got to take ground balls there because my feet can get stale there, and I never want that to happen. So, you know, I've been there recently, and I've been taking ground balls there every single day. I'm going to continue to do that and get my work at every other position, you know, like the beginning of the year when my time, when they call me and tell me that I need to go in a certain position, I'm going to do it at the best I can and help the White Sox win.
Shorts, obviously, your most comfortable spot. You've been there the most.
Yeah, I grew up playing there.
Yeah. What about the outfield? You were taking balls out there, were you not?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to get out there. You know, I think just go out there. I love tracking balls down, you know what I mean, and BP and stuff like that. And I think that the organization knows that I can get out there. It's just a matter of when. So we'll see. I played some there last year in Charlotte. You know, hopefully if things get to it and we need, you know, replacements in the late game or something like that, I can go out there and hold the fort down. Whatever it is that they need me to do, I'll be able to do it. I'd love to play all nine positions if I could, you know, get out there and be on the field all the time.
That's the Joe McEwing way. He'd be at every position every single day to keep himself ready to do it, and that's, I guess, why he became Super Joe. I don't know if you know, you need to quite do that, but that's what he did.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, that's how you stay ready.
Coming into today, you've had 122 at-bats now in the big leagues. Do you feel like both feet are on the ground here? Because it's not that many at-bats, Danny Mendick.
No, it's not. I'll tell you what, it's been awesome. You know, it's a dream. It's 122 at bats. Yeah, that's pretty, you know, for this season and last season, for to not even be able to play, to think that we weren't even going to play a season this year. I'm super happy with it. I'm excited that we're out here, you know, especially with a pandemic going on. It's been tough. So, you know, being able to play baseball, hopefully we just keep moving it forward and get many more at bats.
What's been the biggest challenge with the pandemic for you?
Honestly, just not being able to do anything. I don't want to be the guy that, you know, gets the virus and brings it into the team or something like that. So I'm trying to really not do anything. Stay at the house, you know, go to the field, and that's pretty much it. Order food in. So it's been difficult, you know, not being able to see your family and stuff like that. So, you know, it's been hard, but that's the sacrifice we make for the love of the game. And, you know, I'll tell you what, I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, you just go out there and we get to play baseball this year. We could be sitting on the couch.
The fan part of it with nobody in the stands, does that even have an impact?
It's tough. Yeah, don't get me wrong. Fans are, you know, one of the best parts of the game. You get to, you know, play for people that love watching baseball. So having them not there, yeah, it's different. It's like a Arizona backfield game, but you know, it's been good. It's a, if you can't get up for a big league game, something's wrong. So you know, fans are not, we get to play Major League Baseball.
Does it take any of the pressure off that there's not 40,000 people watching you when you step into the batter's box?
You know, honestly, I sometimes think there's more pressure without fans, because sometimes with the fans, it's like, you know, it doesn't even sometimes feel like everyone's paying attention, or like you want to do well for the fans. So, you know, you got that, maybe just a touch of extra focus. But like right now, it's, you know, you got players, coaches, and that's pretty much it here. So, and scouts or whatever. And so you want to, you know, you feel like it's like, you know, an AZL Fall League game where you're trying to prove yourself, which, you know, you are every day, but it's almost feel like there's a little more pressure because you got, you know, less people here.
Yeah, it's like dead silent. All right, it's the spotlight's on you right now, Danny Medic. What are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly. You got all, you know, however many eyes are on you right there. It's almost rather have 40,000 people, so, you know, you feel a little less like the eyes are on you.
Yeah. Let's talk about real quick here what athletes are doing to try to impact social change what it's been like around the White Sox. Lucas talked the other day to us, you know, in a Zoom call, and I asked him if he felt like there was too much, you know, being put on the players to, hey, what are you guys going to do? It's not just, you can't just sit out one game. What's next? It's like, hey, hang on a second. Like, these guys are in the middle of a season, and I know there's things that are more important than baseball, but is it not on everybody else other than professional athletes to be doing this stuff? And I know that people have platforms. Like, from your perspective, what's that part of the game been like for this season?
You know what? There's just, seems like there's a lot going on in the world right now that no one would have predicted. So, you know, for me and in baseball and stuff like that, I'm a firm believer. I'm a baseball player. You know what I mean? And I'm gonna stay that way. I'm gonna stay out of all the politics and all that different stuff. And everyone has their own beliefs too. You know what I mean? So I respect everyone's beliefs, and I hope they respect mine. But I can't say as I've really felt pressure to do one thing or another. You know, I feel terrible for all the families involved in everything and just everything that's going on. So, you know, it seems like there's a lot of hate in this world right now. And, you know, it'd be nice. Hopefully we can shift that around and turn it back into peace and love, because, you know, that's what we need. It's not about this hatred and whatever that's involved. You know, like God said, we're all created equal. So, you know, just got to try to believe that. And, you know, we're just playing baseball.
Amen. Amen. All right. Now, none of your teammates are listening to this right now. Who do you, as we just get back on a little fun here to wrap it up, who, when they step in the batter's box right now, do you most think is going to hit a home run?
Oh, Pito. Jose Abreu. It looks like he's seeing a beach ball up there. I mean, and then besides the fact he's, you know, Pito, so it's like you just never know. He catches a barrel, and that thing's just going to be absolutely launched.
See, you say that, and like, it's interesting because whenever Eloy touches it to me, it's like, okay, that's out of here. I don't know.
Eloy, too, yes. But Pito's, like, hot right now. And another one is, like, Lewis Robert. You know, he's a little bit more of, like, you never know, because sometimes – seems like he might, you know, he's still getting the hang of seeing a lot of sliders. So that's a little different. But my gosh, when he hits the ball too, it's like, whoa. But those three, oh my gosh, yeah, those three are just, they hit the ball, it's game over.
Is anybody talking about the fact that, hey guys, we got a great chance to go to the playoffs this year? Do conversations like that happen, or is it just, I guess, every day is another day, and we're not talking about that right now? Somebody's got to say something here, Danny Medic. You guys are tied for first in the division, and it's a great – if you guys keep doing what you're doing, you're going to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's definitely in the back of everyone's minds. And we don't necessarily talk about it, but, you know, there was a while ago we had kind of a team meeting and a players meeting after that, and – it was kind of like, you know, let's get this thing going. We got too much talent here to be doing what we're doing. We had like a little span of where we lost a few games. And ever since that, it was kind of like, you know, okay, now we're grooving. And I think, what are we, 9-1 in our past 10 games or something like that?
Yes, and you're 20-12. You were 10-11, and everybody basically thought that the White Sox weren't ready to do it this year. Short season, not going to happen. Now 9-1 in your last 10. By the way, I mean, there's a lot of teams playing good baseball here. I mean, the Indians are 7-3 in their last 10. As I'm looking at the standings right now, and the Twins are 6-4. So it's hard to gain ground in this division, but you've done it. That's
absolutely
the level. And you guys were you were 3-8 at home at one point. Now you're 10-8.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, you know, tell you what, we just got to keep going. We got a big big road trip coming up. We get to play Minnesota and stuff like that. So that's gonna be a test. But I'll tell you what, we're ready to take it to them, and we're gonna make a push. I'll tell you that much.
It's been a ton of fun to watch it. Danny, congrats again on your success. A lot of people rooting for you, and every club needs a Danny Mendick type who can help out wherever the needs are, which are numerous throughout a baseball season. And I know you love being out there every day, and maybe that chance will come to you here down the line. But you've been huge for the White Sox, and I'm rooting for you, man. It's been great to see, and I can't wait for whatever you're going to do with Dancing for Dubs.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
Danny Mendick, my pleasure. And a reminder, Chicago White Sox Charities online auction continue each week. Each auction starts Monday and ends the following Sunday at 7 p.m. All net proceeds benefit Chicago White Sox Charities. Check out the items up for bid at whitesox.com/auction. News coming up, and then Jason Benetti, White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. It's 720 WGN, White Sox TV, Jason Benetti. You called your first no-hitter in the big leagues, Jason Benetti, this week. Special week for the White Sox, special week for you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just happy for Lucas Giolito, because that guy, getting to know Lucas and knowing what he wants to do in the world with baseball and through baseball and how much he thinks about other people and those around him, like the idea that he can walk into a room of whomever and say, I threw a no-hitter. My message has a little bit more power because of that. I mean, he doesn't have to say that. That just happens when you've thrown a no-hitter. So for me, I'm just stoked for the guy who's worked so hard to become an elite starter in Major League Baseball that he and his hard work have seen this thing culminate, at least for now, in the best game of his life.
So you're touching on the off-field stuff with Lucas, too, and he had a Zoom call that we played earlier on the show, and it's so inspiring to see a guy who owns that he came from privilege, realizes how much he benefited by growing up the way he did, and wanting to give back, combine it with how hard he works on his craft and everything else. Just such a huge asset to the White Sox, but I don't know. I'm sure you feel as inspired or proud or whatever the word is when Lucas gets up there and talks about the stuff that matters to him, almost more so than what he does on the field.
Yeah, for me, it's simply that it should never be anything but a ray of sunlight when another human cares about somebody next to him or her. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of tunnel vision because of our reliance on social media, and a lot of things poison the waters. But it's my feeling that most Americans, when given the opportunity to actually really care about the people around them, and there are some people who do that in a heightened way, and I think Lucas Giolito is one of those people who cares about his friends and his family and people who he doesn't understand and his pets. I mean, we had him on the TV broadcast a couple days ago, and he's talking about how his dog, Louie, had to go to the vet a couple days prior to the no-hitter, and that was weighing on him. I mean, I know there are a lot of pet lovers around the country, but it's sort of rare to hear somebody say that after a no-hitter, you know, but there's a lot of warmth in his soul, and frankly, outside of that for a moment, the idea that as a young pitcher, anybody around the Chicago area or beyond who is 13 and has been cut from a team or who is 16 and didn't have a great year or has had their season canceled and doesn't really know what to do, the answer is work on yourself. And I think Lucas Giolito has done that. I mean, I'm talking about how selfless he is in his scope of understanding of the world. But boy, when he drills down on working on himself, there's a lot to gain there as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about the on-field part of that. I mean, here's a guy who had the highest ERA of any starter in the big leagues in 2018, makes an all-star team last year, and continues to want to push it forward to the point that now he's throwing no-hitters. And by the way, the season started with not a great start in his opener. I don't know how high is up, I guess, for Lucas Giolito, Jason, but it seems like it's pretty damn high. I mean, there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of want. He's going to have a hell of an offense around him, too, so which, you know, as far as just piling up wins, not that that is the number one statistic in baseball anymore for pitchers, but maybe I'm just too old school, but I still seem to care about it at least a little. This is a guy that, I mean, what I'm getting to here is when I look at the White Sox and them winning World Series in this year or in the coming years, you're going to need somebody at the front of that rotation to own it, and Lucas is as good a candidate as anyone, and I think it's possible for him.
I think so, too. I mean, the start before the no-hitter made me realize how mentally strong he has become, because if you watch that first inning, I could tell that for the 4 days prior to that start, all he was thinking about was start. Because two starts prior to the no-hitter, he got railed on in the first inning by whoever it was. I want to say Cleveland, but I don't remember specifically. And then he had this dedication and this steely look in his eye in the first inning, the next start. And I was like, man, he is just not going to let that happen today. Like, he is not going to give up a bunch of runs this first inning. And he went 1-2-3, and I think it's an indication of the fortitude that's developed inside that brain of his.
I wonder, because James McCann gets a part in this, and they apparently talked before, I think, that game, saying, look, we're going to approach your bullpen before the game like it's already the first inning, so you come out there and you are as ready as possible to, you know, dominate the first inning and go from there. And I guess Mac is going to catch him the rest of the way here. I think some White Sox fans are worried, Jason, that what's he going to do without James McCann, which, you know, you having a catcher who you're tight with is huge, but I also feel like Lucas is going to get to the point where he can, you know, whoever is back there, it's not going to matter as he continues to progress.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think it always matters. I think it matters, like, that there's a trust factor between pitcher and catcher that is very akin to, I think, quarterbacks and wide receivers. And you see some of these quarterback-wide receiver combinations that just seem like they have an unspoken understanding of so many things. Like, growing up, I think of Steve Young and Jerry Rice.
Sure.
And just like the skinny post patterns that Terrell Owens then began to run after that. And, you know, they developed that same camaraderie, but, you know, it was just a beautiful thing to watch. And I think about the Rams teams in the late 90s with Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt and Kurt Warner. And they were just, I mean, you were catching the ball in stride and you were going. There was just this. But again, the beauty of sports is these partnerships develop when you don't expect them at all. But then when you lose them, you feel like they're never going to happen again. And the thing is, we didn't know until last year that Lucas Giolito and James McCann were going to be such a partnership. So it is an unbreakable bond. But that doesn't mean there wouldn't be bonds at some point down the line should James leave that couldn't form either.
Jason, hang on 1 second. I want to ask you from some of the stuff going on off the field and how that's impacting the White Sox, if at all, on the field. This interview with Jason Benetti, sponsored by Mazda of Orland Park and ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make your car shopping fun. It's White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Mark Harmon with you in the middle of our conversation with Jason Benetti. Jason, as we bring you back in here, there is a lot of pressure, seemingly. Maybe they don't feel it that way, but it feels to me like a lot of pressure on athletes to do a ton as far as making social change. It's not enough to just sit out. Well, what's going to cause lasting impact? And okay, fine, you can put something on your jersey or miss a game, but that's not going to do anything. So what's the point? And if you sit out one more game, I'm not going to watch. Do you think there's too much being put on baseball players, basketball players, athletes in general to move this country forward?
Well, look, I have a lot of feelings about social change, but my perspective on that is it is everybody's individual decision to choose what they use their platform for, how they use it, and how they spur change. There are a lot of people who have not said anything publicly who someone might say, wow, that's a conspicuous absence from this dialogue. Well, there are some people who grew up, and I'm going to use my experience here too. Like when I was in the minor league, and I think everybody here listening or most people know that I have cerebral palsy and I walk differently than the average human being. When I was in the minor league, I very much wanted people to appreciate my work. I wasn't vocal about disability. I wasn't an advocate for change in any way. Like, I didn't really join up with causes because I wanted the work to be good first. I wanted to trust that I believed that my work belonged. And then if I could spur change, I would do it in my own way. But I like being able to do that in the way that I feel comfortable with. And so what I'm saying at in my own experience is there are a lot of people who may not feel comfortable with a bullhorn in their hands. There are people who play basketball and baseball and football who are introverts and want to simply be people who, when their teammates see them, they know that there's a good person inside. Not everybody wants to get on a pulpit and use a microphone or feels comfortable doing that. I mean, think about all the people we know in sports who have grown up with a stutter or politics or otherwise. I mean, my good friend Bill Walton grew up with a stutter, and I guarantee you that he didn't feel comfortable speaking about much of anything at that point. And so I do think that it should never be a requirement that somebody say something, because people don't necessarily feel like that it's their personality to be loud. And so I think we need to understand that people spur change in a lot of different ways, and it's not always with great thunder. Sometimes it's with great quietude.
I was hosting, I just want to tell you this story. I was hosting a regular show on WGN maybe a month ago, and I did an hour on think about times in your life where you knew you could say something or should say something and you didn't, whether it was at Thanksgiving dinner with your family where something felt off or at the workplace and wherever. And the calls that came in were just, it was unbelievable. And one guy called up and he talked about how he grew up with cerebral palsy and he was bullied. And now he's gone on and he's a teacher and he's at this school. And this parent comes up to him and the parent is like instantly crying. He's like, my daughter's in your class. And, you know, she told me that you're her favorite teacher. And, you know, I went to school with you and I know what we did to you. Like the worst of the worst, violent bullying. The guy asked him, "Is like, you know, am I going to hell?" The teacher tells him that, "Hey, man, you actually made me stronger, knowing that I could survive you and your friends." And I'm like, "This guy's showing empathy for the bully." It was unbelievable. A unique perspective of like what it is to deal with being different, having a disability, and trying to find your voice in life. I mean, the whole thing was incredible. I don't know if like what you experienced growing up, and I never want to really make the, when our time, our conversations about that, because I think like you've touched on it a million times, but that was an incredible story, Jason. Maybe I'll send it to you. I don't know.
But that's it. Please do. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, right? Like people learn. You know, people learn that others who are different don't deserve to have hellfire rain down on them. But you know, I can tell you, and I said this on our pregame show yesterday, but you know, me personally, I've always wanted the work to come first, and I've always wanted people to respect the work, maybe even over me as a person. But you know, when I see people hurting because somebody like them has died tragically and without reason, I tend to stop and think about what if it were people with disabilities, and that would make me cry on a nightly basis. And that level of danger is not something I've ever experienced, but I can tell you that it is not dissimilar in the way that being underestimated or undervalued specifically, that's more what it is, undervalued as a human on a daily basis, that can mess with your mind a lot. And I'm a pretty happy person at this point in my life. I like to go on the air and have a good time and enjoy the baseball game with everybody. But there are some days, especially when I'm short on sleep and I'm walking through an airport and somebody asks if I need a cart ride and they're doing it just to be nice. But then I get on the plane and the flight attendant asks if I need help putting my bag up in the overhead compartment. And then the flight attendant asks me three times if I'm sure I can handle the exit row door. At some point, you're like, man, the world really does see me differently. And so what I would say is, whether you're an advocate for the police or for Black Lives Matter or for whatever it might be, any cause out there, any generalization hurts. Anytime you judge people based on the first characteristic that you see about them runs the risk of discounting the beauty that's inside of their soul. And we are a worse society when we divide people based on traits. When we say this person is bad because they are X, this person is good because they are Y, we get worse, because there are a lot of people who I know saw me as a non-starter as a television announcer because I can't look at the camera. And I'm not going to inflate anything that I do in any way, but I will say I'm a viable Major League Baseball announcer. And nobody would have found that out if people didn't look a little bit past the first thing they see about me. And so any generalization about any group based on one trait is just flat out wrong. And the spewing of hate that's going around in a lot of circles just doesn't need to happen. Train your mind to do it a different way.
Amen. Amen. And I think the reminder there, and I don't want to get too high on the old pulpit here, but, and I'm talking to myself too here, your thoughts are your thoughts. And then you can actually look at that thought and be like, well, you know what? That's not the best thought I've ever had. And maybe I was trained that way, and that's not the person that I want to be. So I guess I'm trying to let people know that, look, everybody's got negative stuff flying around in their heads that they're not proud of. It's what you do from there. You know, you're gonna have your biases. You're gonna have your judgments. Okay, that's how that's been ingrained in me. Whatever, that's what I was taught. And so, and now what? Who's the person that I want to be? And then you can go forward.
Yeah, I mean, look. Love is not political. And deeply caring about the person next to you is not political. Flat out, end of the road, that's the case. So if we learn more about the people next to us, and believe in the soul of humanity, that's not a political function. And that's where I stop on it, honestly.
Yeah. And, yeah, utopian. I believe in humanity at the end of the day. Sometimes that end of the day is taking a while to get to. Let's wrap up with something on the field here. So the White Sox coming into today tied for first place. Did you expect them to be here?
Did I expect them? No. Did I think it was possible? Absolutely.
Yeah.
I felt comfortable that this team had something special going on in spring training. And then with a 60-game season, I really felt like they benefit from there being only 60. I think this team is one of those sort of supernova bursts of energy teams that in a short span can really hurt you. So I felt like it was even more possible with 60, and I feel really good about what's going on there. And frankly, the fact that they've weathered so many injuries is a really good sign, too, depth-wise.
Jason Benetti, thank you so much for the conversation today, my friend. I appreciate it. Continued dominance. That's right, I said dominance. you guys are doing awesome, and we always appreciate you being on White Sox Weekly.
Carm, thank you, and thanks for the thoughtful discussion.
Absolutely. I loved it. Thanks again. And thank you, by the way, for listening to White Sox Weekly. That'll do it for today. Thank you to Ben Anderson for producing the program. White Sox Weekly. Thanks to Jason Benetti, Andy Mazur, and yes, our friend Danny Mendick as well. Ton of fun today. Hope you enjoy the program. It's 720 WGN.